Well, good afternoon. And I hope everybody's really stuck, that you try and not to go to sleep. I pulled the worst time of the day, but the best subject for me. I got a chance to get this subject, and I love this, creating a positive environment. So we're going to fire on off into this thing so that we have time to get it, do it justice. My name is Bill Prince, and I'm uniquely qualified to give this talk because my initials are BP. That's B positive. To top that off, my blood type is B positive. And on top of that, the main reason I'm positive is in my genes. You didn't have a chance to know my two grandfathers, but they were both very positive people. My dad and my uncle, they both had debilitating diseases that almost crippled them. My uncle was getting crippled real bad. And probably if you call both of them right now and ask them how they were doing, they'd say, I'm doing great. I'm having a great day. I was raised with positive people. And so I'm a result of that. And so that's why I want to share this with you, because I'll tell you up front, I don't think that you're going to get to heaven unless you're a positive person. That's how strongly I feel about it. Negative people are not going to have the vision to live for Christ hard enough to get to heaven. You've got to be a positive person, because we live by faith. By definition, my title is Creating a Positive Environment. So I want you to know exactly where I'm coming from. By environment, I mean the total of circumstances surrounding a person or group of people, especially the combination of external physical conditions that affect and influence their growth, development, and survival. Growth, development, and survival. The social and cultural changes that shape forces that shape the life of a person or a people. Shape a person. Keep that in mind. Positive. Confident in opinion or assertion. Fully assured. We want our children to be confident. That's the only way they're going to resist the devil. It's the only way they're going to lead anybody to Christ. They've got to be confident. Emphasizing what is laudable. Now, I'll be like Brad. I didn't really know what laudable was, but looking it up, it's a good word. Laudable means deserving or worthy of praise, admirable, commendable, hopeful or to the good, or constructive. Measured or proceeding in a direction assumed as beneficial, progressive or auspicious. I didn't know what that one was, but it's a good word. Auspicious means promising success, opportune, favorable, favored by fortune, prosperous, or fortunate. So positive. That's what we want our children to be. We want them to have a positive attitude. Now, creative. Let's throw that word in here. What do we mean by creative? To cause to come into being. As parents, it is our job to set the atmosphere in the home. We're going to do it whether we want to or not. Our job is to pick a positive attitude. Something unique that would not naturally occur or that is not made by ordinary processes. The ordinary processes of the world is the natural man cannot see heaven. And so our job as Christian parents is to create an atmosphere where children see God and can see Him. To cause to happen, to bring about, arrange as by intention or design. So putting all of those three things together, here's my statement of what I want us to think about. To create a positive environment is to intentionally cause to happen by design the external physical conditions and the cultural forces to shape a person that is confident, worthy of praise, and will proceed in a direction that is beneficial, prosperous, and that favors success. None of us want our children to fail, but we can give them characteristics that will almost guarantee failure. We want them to succeed, and it will not be by accident. It will be an intentional design on our part. What to do? Now I'm going to give you what the internet will tell you. I've got about five screens here. This is what you'll get on an internet search on how to create a positive environment working at home. I'm going to hit these quick. Got to. You want to build trust. You want to communicate positively and openly. Expect the best from your staff. Create team spirit. Give recognition and appreciation. Give credit and take responsibility. Be approachable. Provide a positive physical environment. Make staff evaluations a positive experience. Make it fun. A calm, positive, nurturing, and comfortable home environment enhances one's parenting vision. The roles a child assumes can prepare him or her for the responsibilities of adulthood. Communication, not coercion, is all important. Communicate, listen, and explain your reasons why. Avoid negative put-downs or name-calling. Use respectful and encouraging words to promote a feeling of security and trust. Create an atmosphere where your children come to you with a problem, large or small. Children must be allowed to contribute at a level they can. Their chores will help keep the environment clean and orderly. Foster cooperation, not competition. Each child is unique. Avoid comparing children. Recognize and celebrate your child's individuality and make time exclusively for him or her. Believe in your children and they will believe in themselves. See in them their potentials, not their failures. There's always another tomorrow. Make sure you are creating a clean and orderly environment. How you choose to talk to your house is something to consider when creating a positive home environment. You can be rude and demanding. You can speak nicely. You can speak respectfully. You can speak encouraging. You can put them down. You can be condescending. You cannot enjoy listening to your children, and they will sense it every time when you're talking to them and you pick up the cell phone instead of looking them in the eye and listening to them. Every time they know what's important to them because of your actions. Now, listening involves hearing the heart of someone, hearing someone's feelings. Listen between the lines. What do they say? You need to pay attention to what you are allowing inside your house. This means you need to watch carefully what books, movies, TV shows, and music members of your family are involved with. But why? Thinking person should be asking, so what? Why do I want to go to that much trouble and do those things and pay attention to details to make a positive environment for my children? Because all adults, as far as we know in the world, except for two, began life as children. And children are, for the most part, molded and shaped by their early environment. What they pick up at an early age will determine where they go. The goal is to produce children that are confident in themselves. Now, I didn't have time for all the scriptures, but you remember the parable of the sower? What happened to the person that didn't have root in themselves? They were lost. They didn't take up the seed. They were lost. They didn't have root in themselves. They didn't have confidence in themselves. They didn't have confidence in their independence. Our children have got to have confidence in their independence to not follow idols or false teachers. We know those phrases are in the Bible. They must be confident in their life's goals, not tossed to and fro. They must be confident in God and Jesus, the Creator and the Savior. As the slide we saw where Joshua said, "Choose you this day whom you will serve." As for me and my house, the positive person has got to apply that to himself and say, as for me, I'm going to serve the Lord. You can do whatever you want to. Even if it's to the spouse that chooses to be a negative person. If it's to mom and dad, if it's to boss, whoever it is. If you want to be negative, you go ahead. But I can't get to heaven being negative. I've got to be positive to have my faith in God and show Him that I have faith in Him. But why, finally, simply because the Master said so. I've used this so many times, but I've got to try to wear it out one more time. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 7. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently unto your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. That's the four quadrants, or the four areas that encompass a man's entire life. When you're out in public, when you're at home, when you end the day, and when you start the day, the attitude that you have. That's it. That's everything about you. And God says in all those places, teach my words, not just the words, but the principles. Live it before them. Create that environment. This commandment indicates the power of the instructive influence of parents in the life of a child. The responsibility of parents to perform as godly parents. As parents, we are responsible for the globe around the kitchen table. For lack of time, I cannot develop this thought as much as possible, but I want to warn you, but also encourage you. The strongest teaching tool you have for positive, but also the most destructive tool that you will have is in your house around the kitchen table. That's when families get together. That's when they turn the TV off. They let go of all these other things and they sit around that table. And what is talked about around that table, that is the time, that is the one time usually in the day, one or two times, depending on the number of meals, that families actually get there physically in one spot. You can either build or break the spirit of a child right there by what you talk about. Do you talk about other people? Do you talk about things? Do you talk about God? What do you talk about? How do you talk? Do you talk mean, rough? Are you kind in all things? The glow. See, this is a double-edged sword. Sometimes the glow is negative. But the glow needs to be positive. We set the glow around the kitchen table. Never forget and underestimate the power of what you say around the kitchen table. Engineers are trained observers, but are second on the list to children. I'm an engineer by training, by profession, by thinking. I'll tell you up front, I'm not very smart. But I am a trained observer. An engineer has to be a trained observer. Okay? A doctor buries their mistakes. A lawyer blames their mistakes on a bad jury. An engineer's name is on a design, and he's liable as long as the structure stands. So we have to be observant to what we do and what we put on the ground. So we are trained observers, but my observation skills are second to my grandkids because they pick up things just like that. They are very good observers. They are better observers than I am. They have a wide open mind and they're eager to fill it. They have quick ears and eyes, but they don't have a filtering system yet. Adults get this filtering system where they can filter what's said based on who's saying it. Kids take it completely at face value. I can tell you tales, but I don't have time. But they take it at face value, exactly what's said. They take the positives and the negatives in alike, see it, and tell it like it is to them. They are brutally honest. How many of you have had your Aunt Mary come to visit you, and as soon as she got in the house, the little grandkid or child runs up in her lap, and the first thing they say is, "You're not nearly as fat as Mom and Daddy said you were." See? They are brutally honest. They listen to what's said, and they're not ashamed to repeat it or afraid to repeat it. So we have to be careful. Very careful. We want them to be positive. We want them to be positive. Now, I'm going to run through this real quick because some of y'all have probably already seen this before. This is so true. If a child lives with criticism, he learns to condemn. If a child lives with hostility, he learns to fight. If a child lives with fear, he learns to be apprehensive. If a child lives with jealousy, he learns to feel guilt. If a child lives with tolerance, he learns to be patient. If a child lives with encouragement, he learns to be confident. If a child lives with praise, he learns to appreciate. If a child lives with acceptance, he learns to love. If a child lives with approval, he learns to like himself. If a child lives with recognition, he learns that it is good to have a goal. If a child lives with honesty, he learns what truth is. If a child lives with fairness, he learns justice. If a child lives with security, he learns to trust in himself and others. If a child lives with friendliness, he learns the world is a nice place in which to live. All of those are so true. We need to make sure we're giving the positive picture, positive reinforcement to our children. Now, we've got to make a distinction right here between a what to and a how to. And I'm going to try to make a little point about this and the kind of preaching we do and I hear in the Church of Christ. Everything I read to you so far, just about, that little poem that I just, the thing that I just read, and then the five strings of all the things, those were all what to's. Those were all techniques. And we in the Church of Christ, we're real good at getting techniques. You think about this in all the preaching that you hear from now on, this, you hear this song. We spend more time telling people what to do than we do telling them how to do it. Okay, for instance, we tell a person, you're not supposed to be homosexual. But I have yet to have a preacher explain how that person is going to change his orientation or to change his thinking. We tell people what to do and what not to do, but we fall short when we tell them how to do it. You're not supposed to be in adultery, but how do you tell that man you got to live by yourself the rest of your life? How do you tell him to give up that wife that he has grown to love over these years? How? It's the how we fall short on. But we got plenty of what's. Up to this point in this, I've given you what. It's all techniques. How do you do it? How do you get it in your heart? That's where we want to go from here in the rest of the few minutes I have with you. What to's describe the process, but deal only with techniques. Just techniques. Techniques are okay in the short run, but they wear thin in the long run. When you're young, you tell your kids to go to church, but if you don't live it, when they get older, they'll tell you they don't want to go to church because they haven't had the why do I need to go to church built into them. They've just been told you got to go, and they've not seen the example. So techniques are okay in the short run, but they won't hold up in the long run. How-tos get to the heart of the problem because they get to the heart of the sanctifier. 1 Corinthians 7:13-14, the woman which has a husband that believes not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now are they holy. I don't know if I understand everything about this verse, but I understand enough to know this. A person that is a good person, that is a positive person, can have an influence on that home. They may not be able to influence everything, but they can influence some things. Okay, notice, the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. Now, does she purify him? Well, we don't want to go that far. But does she help to lead him? Does her goodness keep him from coming in and cursing around the children? Probably. He may not feel it in his heart, but because of her character, his conduct probably will be a lot cleaner than it would be if she was a heathen too. Okay, do you see the point? So the how-tos that we're going to talk about the rest of this lesson is to get to the heart of whoever's setting the main tone for the family. The heart of the sanctifier is whether he is a pessimist or an optimist. Okay, here's my couch. Here's my two favorite couches. Y'all can't see this one too good. What's right here on this cap is a glass. It signifies it's being half full of water. Now, at the bottom of it, it says half full. That's the optimist that's in me. That's why I like this cap. But that's not my best cap. My best optimist cap is this one right here. Because this is one that says pray and then call your shots. And I've had people tell me that I was arrogant for wearing this hat. Okay? But I believe in this hat. And I believe in this hat because Jesus says, if you deny me before men, I'll deny you before my Father. You've got to confess me. So I'm not ashamed to wear this hat that says I believe in prayer, and I believe that something's going to happen when I pray. I have confidence in it. It's that faith. I'm a positive person. And I'm not ashamed to wear this hat. Pray, and then call your shots. Now, the Lord may have me to go in a different direction. If He does, that's fine. But I'm still going to pray with confidence. And I'll tell you this. I've had more people, complete, total strangers, from young teenage girls up to old people. I don't mean a thousand. A few, though. Dozen. Complete, total strangers have told me, I like your hat. I get your hat. So I'm not ashamed of that. This is my most optimist hat because, in my opinion, when you become a Christian, You have just enrolled in the largest optimist club in the universe. Okay? The largest optimist club in the universe is Christians. You've got to be an optimist to be there. Here's a few things. The heart of the sanctifier is whether he is a pessimist or an optimist. So what does this mean? The pessimist is always looking for someone else to blame. The optimist knows he could be at fault. What did the disciples say when Jesus said one of you is going to betray me? All 12 of those men, the scriptures say, all 12 of them said, is it I? Now how would you want to go and pick 12 people that you know, and if every one of them would take the blame when something went wrong? You'd be hard-pressed to do it. Jesus did. All 12 of those men said, is it I? A pessimist expects things to not work and gets frustrated. An optimist expects things to not work, but he sees a blessing. A lesson in patience. An optimist believes that getting is contentment. Gimme. And that's contentment. An optimist believes in giving to receive. A pessimist believes in energy conservation to the extent of shutting down the light. Pessimists don't move around too much. They don't have a lot of energy. It's been my observation. But an optimist believes in burning energy to create energy. You want the surroundings of your home to be energetic. Have you ever been to visit a home where two pessimists married each other? I have. You know, it's like the Temple of Doom. Each one of them is going to tell you about their medical problems. And each one of them probably could have had a whole lot healthier lifestyle had they burned some energy. I mean, exercise. Really. If two pessimists marry, we need to have prayer for the children. Because they can't do it. They can't give them a positive attitude. What are the kids going to have? Now, what we hope is that an optimist will marry a pessimist. Because what that will do is that will hopefully move the pessimist over, and you'll have a little conversion there, and it will be one super test for that optimist to see if he can hold out, not get drugged down. See? So it's going to make them both stronger. Now, if two optimists marry, watch out. You know what you have? You got two people that load their kids up in a tent and go to California and tent camp from there all the way across the country. That's what two optimists do if they both marry. Okay. Pessimist believes in energy conservation. An optimist believes in burning energy to make more energy. A pessimist, if you're in a controlling relationship, chances are almost 100% that you're in it with a pessimist. If you're in a controlling relationship. On the other hand, an optimist does not want to control, but to lead as an elder over the flock, not as a lord over the flock, but as an example. That's the way an optimist wants to lead. The pessimist's main words are can't, won't, and never. And you could put out another dozen negative type words, and that's their favorite words. But an optimist's main words are try, maybe, if. He always leaves the possibility that it might work. Two optimists and a pessimist were talking, and the pessimist says, I don't think that's going to work. And the optimist said, well, you be more positive? And the pessimist thought a minute and says, okay, I know it won't work. All right? Then there's a story of the optimist that fell off a 10-story building. On the way down, he was saying, so far, so good. Okay? Optimist and pessimist. It shows. It bleeds through. Observations on positive and negative people. Just positive and negative, because positive is part of our title. Positive people are willing to dance. Negative people are only willing to sit and wait and see. Now by dance, I don't mean literally on the dance floor, but I mean through life. With a spark in your eye and a skip in your step, and you're ready to see what the day is going to give to you, and you pass that on to your children, and they've got the confidence. They've got the confidence. That's what we want to do. Positive people seek to affirm other people, things, and ideas. Negative people seek to snipe. Now, we know the word snipe as in sniper. the long-range gunner that hides in trees and buildings and protects our troops by killing other snipers elsewhere. But that word is also the word snipe, can apply to people that sit back and throw darts at other people's ideas and criticisms. To shoot at individuals as opportunity offers from a concealed or distant position. To attack a person or a person's work with derogatory criticism, especially anonymously or from a safe distance, as from the kitchen table. Okay? I can't tell you how important this is. Don't sit around the kitchen table and criticize anybody that's trying to do something. Even if they're wrong, just say, well, I don't think that's going to work right, but I'm hoping that they'll see the way to do it right. Because that sniping will plant seeds in children's heads that will bear fruit that we won't like when they get older. Positive people seek to build people up, thinking they will rise with them. Negative people tear down people's ideas, efforts, personality, character, ability, etc., thinking that by lowering their surroundings, then they will be taller themselves. The problem is, you begin to recognize and watch human nature. Listen to the way people talk and the words they use. You will recognize the negative people. They won't stand tall. Being negative never makes you stand taller. You stand taller when you build people up. Positive people see something different and seek to know why it's different and to learn something new, especially farmers. Okay, I love to work with farmers because they are some of the most innovative people that work with nothing. Okay, a rocket scientist or an inventor, he can come up with great, wonderful things with a $1 million budget or equipment and all these other kinds of things and huge computers. But a farmer typically has hardly anything. And he welds and he makes things and he puts things together. And I don't know if you've ever gone out on people's farms, but there are no two that's alike. There's something different, physically. Different about the way they do things, the way they build their buildings, the way they set up their sheds. Whatever it is that they do, the way they park their equipment and take care of their equipment. They are very innovative people. Most of them have got to be positive or they would never be in farming. Because think of it. How many of us would give up a steady income to swap it for a person trying to farm with the weather conditions and then the market and all the different things that can happen to destroy a crop? And yet every year they have to make decisions on what to plant, when to plant, so on and so forth. So they are positive people. Negative people see something different and immediately think it's wrong, bad, crazy, or foolish. I was in Lowe's the other day, and they had a watering can. I'd never seen one like it. It had a funny-looking shaped neck. It was all bent over. It had this handle. It went back and forth on the top, and I bought it. Because I figured somebody had to have a good idea to make something so weird and get it into production. So I bought it, took it home, and you know what? That's the best watering can I've ever had my hands on. It puts out water more evenly and faster than anyone I've ever had my hands on. So anything weird, I'm usually going to try it because somebody is kind of weird that made it, and it worked. Positive people have the ability and the habit to see the big picture and evaluate and make a judgment of the consequences and can formulate a plan of action. Do y'all see the word Christian written right here? Do you see the word? Can you imagine the word Christian written? Uh-oh. That is not good at all. Let's see. That's the wrong button. I'm going to be positive that I can finally find the right place. Okay. Look, imagine the word Christian written across there, because isn't that us? We see the big picture. We can judge consequences before they happen to tell whether something is going to have the outcome we want. That's why I'm saying it's going to be hard for negative people to get to heaven, because they can't really see the good picture. They can come to church. They can follow other people's example. They can follow techniques. But here, it's not here. It's not here. Negative people see the first roadblock and shut down because they can't see the big picture. Positive people are aware of what they say and how they say it and try to say the right things the right way. Negative people speak to please themselves and are blind to the consequences. I heard Abraham Lincoln's name mentioned this morning when I came in. That's great. One thing he did, you may not realize, he was very conscious of hurting people's feelings in letters. One of his generals had a chance to really crush a big part of the Southern Army after several days of battle. But this Northern general allowed the Southerners to escape across the river. Abraham Lincoln was furious. He wrote a letter to him. Why did you let them escape? We could have destroyed that army. We could have ended the war early. What were you thinking? He looked at the letter and looked and finally tore it up, according to the story. Because he said, well, there's no telling how many men he saw die already. There's no telling how many lives he had already seen killed on that battlefield. And he couldn't stand to see another slaughter of helpless Southerners. So Abraham Lincoln didn't send that letter. That's the story. And many other things that he would write and rewrite to soften it so he didn't come across harsh in his words. We've got to be careful. We can speak harsh. We can write harsh. And a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. Almost all relationship problems are caused by negative thinking. And the rest can successfully be worsened by it. Okay, so now we get to the how-tos. The how-tos of change, I'm not going to leave you without positive things of what to do. The Word of God is the only thing I know that can reach deep enough into the soul to change a person's polarity. From a negative person to a positive person. The Word of God can do it. How do we do it? It must be devoured using the M&Ms, memorization and meditation. And I know most of you are not familiar with this term right here, but I've been working on a series, and I've got up a few lessons on it, on the M&Ms, the value of the M&Ms. Memorize and meditate. Memorize and meditate. Memorizing by itself is okay, but it's not the best. Meditating is okay, but people tell you to meditate doing yoga. So by themselves, nothing special about either one, but put them together. And you meditate upon the Word of God that you have in your head, and it will change you. It will change you. I started doing this probably 9 or 10 months ago now because my dad, the positive person, was doing it. And he kept talking about it so well, I thought I'd try it. Okay? Didn't notice the difference first month. Didn't notice the difference the second month. Third or fourth month, I began to notice some things about my attitude and about my outlook. And I didn't think I had a bad outlook or attitude to start with, but I noticed it got better. It got more in line with the Scriptures. I was keeping them in my head better. There's no downtime. There's no bored time. There's no wasted time standing in the line at Walmart or pumping gas because you've got something here to focus your mind on godly thoughts all the time. This is what changes deep down inside the Word of God in a person's heart can reform the homosexual and can comfort the person that's been in adultery and is out of it and living by themselves or whatever the situation is, or a person that's in a bad marriage and is having to live with a mean, negative person or parents or whatever that situation might be. The Word of God is the how-to. So here's a few things. I'm going to end this with 10 verses that I'm going to give to you and a reason for each one. And if you have these things in your memory, when we get through in each one, I want you just to answer the question to yourself. Do I believe this verse? And if I do believe this verse, how can I be a negative person? If a short-sighted hope leads to misery, imagine where a heavenly hope will lead. 1 Corinthians 15 and 19. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable. Now this is the negative side, but in your mind, flip this to the positive. If we have heavenly hope, hope of heaven, long-range, far-sighted hope, we are of all men most joyful. We're of all men most joyful, so Christians shouldn't walk around with a frown on their face and like they're scared. joyful. Number 9, we are not intended to feel at home in a location, but in a relationship with God, too. Verses Hebrews 13 and 14. Here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. 1 Peter 2 and 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul. And many times, we're focusing on what? Our homes, our houses, things that are trivial. And God says, you're just strangers down there anyway. You don't have anything that's going to last for eternity. So we get feeling negative because we're worrying about the wrong things. We should not stress over that which is destined to be ashes, but rejoice over a fireproof promise. 2 Peter 3, 12 and 13, wherein the heavens, being on fire, shall be dissolved. This is what's going to be the result of the coming of the day of God. And the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwells righteousness. Look at this. Heavens will be dissolved. The elements shall melt with fervent heat. 2 verses before that, He said, the earth and the works therein shall be burned up. And yet, how much time do people spend thinking about what is destined to be ashes? We need to be positive and think for things that will last. The new heaven and the new earth, and live toward that. The presence of our enemies will produce the best abundance. Alright? For those of you that are not blessed to live and work among positive, bubbly people. Okay? And not all positive people are bubbly people. Being a positive person doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be silly or spontaneous. But you're going to be happy. You're going to be inwardly happy. Psalms 23 and 5. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Where do you prepare the table? You prepare the table in the presence of mine enemies. I'll say it again. A positive person is going to be a positive person. An optimist is going to be an optimist. If he happens to be closely associated with a pessimist, that is his test. That is what will affirm his belief that being positive is the only way to get to heaven and be a good example. Be a positive person. God didn't say He was going to protect us from everything. He said, I'll put you in your enemies. I'll make your table around your enemies. But I'm going to take care of you while you're there. Now, do you believe it or do you not? Will you wear this cap or would you not? Do you believe it or do you not? If you believe it, you've got to be positive. You can't help but be positive. To be positive, we must cast off the negative, number 6, 1 Peter 5, 6, and 7. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. Cares will drag you down as quick as anything else. Sin will get you down worse first. Okay? Sin will get you down. We really need to try hard to get all the sin out of our lives. I was so proud of Brother Danny's statement when he said we think sin is just kind of a natural type thing, but it was a big deal to God because His Son lost His life because of sin. It's a big deal. It's a huge deal. It will get you down. God says, put your cares on me. I'll take care of you. You believe? Do you believe it? Number 5, realizing what God knows about us may be fearful to the negative, but will be reassuring to the positive. See, Matthew 10, 29 through 31, are not two sparrows sold for a farthing. One of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. The negative person doesn't like this verse because they think everything they do is hidden. God doesn't see this. He doesn't see me here. He doesn't know I'm doing this, that I'm saying this. But the positive person sees the same verse with great assurance. God knows this much about me. What have I got to worry about? I am in untouchable with God on my side, the master of the universe. Number four, I'm out of time. The Lord's plan is for us to be happy with His handiwork. Psalms 118 and 24. This is the day which the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Now, just before this verse, He's talking about Jesus Christ coming. So, this could be the one day the Lord has made, or it could be the day of salvation at the coming of Jesus. Get that? My time's up. But I'm only on number four, so you're going to have to hang in here with me. This is the day which the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. And when we're not, what message are we sending God? If we can relate to the joy that Jesus saw, we will let no negative distract us. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. And let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, get this, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Who for the joy, I don't know what that joy was, I didn't see it. Jesus saw it. I have to rely on faith that Jesus was a logical man and He wanted to live as much as I want to live. Yet He saw something so wonderful that He was willing to give up His physical life. And so it's on my faith in Jesus that He saw something in heaven that was so joyful and so glorious that I'll have to make a sacrifice too. May not be as hard one as He made right then, but I am willing to make this sacrifice if we can see that joy. Number two, if we can see others as children, we will see no negative. Remember, this part of the lesson is the how to change the part of the sanctifier. We get our hearts right inside, positive actions will be automatic on the outside. Okay, Luke 23, 33 and 34, when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, there they crucified Him and the malefactors, one on the right hand and one on the left. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. If you find yourself let down by people, disappointed in people, depressed because people are not doing their job, because adults are not acting like adults, they're acting more like children. If adults are not showing care to other people, but are running roughshod over other people's feelings one way or another, and that disturbs you and it makes you feel bad, you're going to begin to get negative feelings. God doesn't want you to have negative feelings. This is one of my main go-back-to verses whenever I'm feeling let down by other people's actions. It's this one right here. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. We have babies here in this audience. I've got a wonderful little grandbaby that's staying with me right now while my son's house is being built. And that little baby, I just love that little booger. And you know what? She can dirty her diaper, and it doesn't bother me a bit. I'll go change it. Or she can wet her diaper. It doesn't matter. That suits me. Because there's a dressing table right on top of the dresser. And whenever I change her diaper, I'll take her and stand her up where she can see herself in that mirror. And she gives me a day's worth of joy when she starts laughing at that little creature that she's seeing in the mirror when she sees herself. She goes crazy, jumping and laughing and smiling and grinning. So I put up with all this stuff because that's what she is. She doesn't know any better. We'll put up with anything with them. We've got to have that attitude toward people. They don't know Jesus on the cross. They were killing Him. They were taking His life. And He was there to save them. And He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not. See, if He had stopped, if Jesus had cut this off right there, where that semicolon is, if that's all He'd said, was just, Father, forgive him. That would have been good. But what was so wonderful is He said, why? Forgive them, Father, because they don't realize what they're doing. So if you're an optimist linked up with a pessimist, forgive them because they don't understand. They haven't seen the big picture yet, but I've got to show them. and your children if they don't act just right. Just stay positive. Stay positive. Don't try to correct them with criticism. Don't try to correct them with criticism. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. No, words hurt my character. They kill my spirit. They destroy my confidence. So hit me with sticks and stones and get it over with. And just don't kill my character. Number one. You can read it. Christ's death. If we can't be positive, knowing the Creator of the universe sent His Son, and He gave up His life, and He is on our side if we're Christian. If we can't be positive about that and shred every negative thought that comes into our head, how can we get to heaven? How can we love Him enough if this doesn't motivate us from the heart? If this doesn't make us the most positive person in the world, when you become a Christian, you become a member of the biggest optimist club in the universe. The whole entire universe that has ever been or ever will be, you are a member of the optimist club that's going to heaven. That ought to be easy for us to make a positive environment to everybody that we're around. That's the how-to, okay? I've given you techniques, but I've tried to leave you with the how-to. This is the how-to from your heart. That's the way it'll work. Romans 5, 6 through 8, for when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commended His love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, we weren't righteous, we weren't good, Christ died for us. The end. I'm positive about that. Thank you.